and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey.
And I'm Steve Miller.
And you join us for an hour of chat about Land Rovers and everything to do with owning them. What have you been up to then, Steve? How's it been going for you this week?
Not too bad. could be better. Back from Newbury, which was an absolute amazing event this time around. It was the blue sky.
A cracking day.
Wasn't it good?
I really, really enjoyed it. Probably I think probably my favourite Spares Day I've ever been to.
Me too. Ever.
Yeah.
Really warm, sunny, everyone was happy.
Tons of traders, tons of people through the gate.
Had a really good turnout.
Everyone was happy. Lots of bargains to be had. I snaffled up a few bits for the 110.
Yeah, see, what did I get? Well, I picked up my galvanised stuff. That's what I did.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, you had a load of stuff galvanised for your 90, didn't you?
Yeah, so that's been collected. And the only other thing I bought was a rivnut tool, because I don't have one.
Fair. Rivnut tools are handy.
They are handy, because the rivnuts on my rear cross member that hold on the mud flaps of come loose.
On the TD5?
Yeah, on the TD5.
How odd.
Yeah, no, that is odd. So I'm going to redo them and see what happens.
Yeah, might be worth getting the hexagonal, like the ones with a bit, like the teeth around it, serrated bits around the sides. Yeah, they bite a bit more.
Because they don't have that on them. I noticed that they were sort of hanging out.
And they're just generic ones. Yeah. But I thought we did a reasonable job of fitting them. But
the
vibration maybe just...
Yeah, it's been a while. They've been on a while, haven't they?
Yeah, that's true. What did I buy? I bought a wheel and tyre, spare wheel and tyre for the 110. White Defender tubeless wheel with a tyre on.
Oh, okay.
I bought a radiator, a 19J used radiator, because the radiator...
Why is that?
Well, Steve, I was aware of a little bit of corrosion along the bottom of the radiator on the original rad on the 110. And when I went to remove it to flush the cooling system out, the bottom sort of third of the radiator stayed on the chassis and I lifted the rest of it away. It was absolutely dissolved.
It did look a bit crustier than I looked.
Well, I knew it didn't... It didn't
look his best.
You could see it was a little bit compromised, but I didn't realise just how brittle it was. So I'm hoping, though, that that's the reason for all the bottles of water in the back, is that that rad's been leaking. You can see where it's dripped on top of the front cross member over time.
And because it wasn't leaking... Oh, because it was leaking, they must have been topping up with water and not coolant.
Yeah. It
adds to the corrosion.
Exactly.
So, yeah. I can see that. It was all brown, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I got that radiator and then I got it home and I saw that the top port, top hose port was slightly different. It's like a straight onto the rad rather than 90-degree bend like the one that's on there at the moment.
Okay.
And that's because it's a Freight Rover engine. The thermostat housing's different, so I've had to buy a 12J thermostat housing off Glencoyne Engineering, actually, who's Norfolk Garage in the mag, to make the top hose point at the right, in the right direction. It's all snowballed. But when I took the thermostat housing off, I was very pleased to see that A, actually had a thermostat in it, which means it hasn't been removed for an overheating issue. So that's good. But the water inside the engine and the radiator is very brown, where no one's run any antifreeze in it.
Yeah, I get you.
So, needs a good flush out with a hose, and then I'll put that new radiator on and then put some actual coolant in it rather than just tap water.
And then go from there.
See what happens. Yeah. So
you'll be bombing up the A1 in no time.
I don't think bombing is the right word, but trundling, mate.
Trundling.
But should we have a listener's question?
Yeah, because we didn't have one last week, did we?
No.
Did we? I think we did.
Yeah, we did.
With Eddie,
Range Rover one.
Eddie answered it, didn't he?
He did. Since then, we have had more. So, Mark Savage gets in touch. He says, "Hello, I've hopped across the ditch from Australia to New Zealand for a few days. I was delighted to see plenty of Land Rovers of various flavours around the streets of Christchurch, but the prize was taken by this early model. I think it's a Series 1, but I'm not completely sure how to distinguish them, so I'm sending it to you and Steve for your thoughts. It was in impressive condition. Love the podcast and the magazine, as ever, but still not that much closer to my first Land Rover." Oh, you'll get there, Mark. It's all good. It'll be well worth it when you do get there. Cheers, Mark Savage. That is indeed a Series 1 pickup.
It is.
For the
very nice, actually.
It's very cool, isn't it? It's a short wheelbase, but it's got a truck cab, which is quite a rare combination. But just sort of like a bit of a sort of spotter's guide, if you like. The easiest way to tell a Series 1 from a Series 2 and a Series 3 is they have totally flat sides. There's no bump halfway down. There's no like hip the body doesn't flare out.
No.
They're totally straight from top to bottom.
They are, yeah.
If you've got that, you've got a Series 1. They're also narrower. The axles are narrower.
They just look dainty, don't they? Really?
Yeah.
Series 1s.
Generally
speaking. It's difficult to explain to somebody what a Series 1 is and a Series 2, because the untrained eye just thinks they all look the same. They're just old Land Rovers.
Yeah. Yeah, if you
some people call a Series 1 a Defender, don't they?
Yeah, that
yeah,
annoys me more than it should. I shouldn't really care.
Yeah, but they still think, oh, look at that old Defender. It's not.
It's just like, I think you'll find.
Look at that old Jeep. Even worse.
Yeah. But no, Series 1, that's the easiest way. And the tub and everything's a lot shallower. It's not as tall.
And you've got like the doors, haven't you? So I always think the doors are really short. And then you've got that extra panel.
Yeah,
so before you got the
door
the
bottoms, that's it. Yeah
the that's the way I always think. Oh, that's so immediately. I look at the doors.
Definitely. And the 80 inches have the triangular bit in the back of the door that you put your hand through to open the door.
Which is the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, that's another easily distinguishable feature. And the fact that an 80 inch is even tinier and daintier than the 86 and 88, and of course the long wheelbases as well. But I'd love to own a Series 1 one day. I was never really that bothered about them until I drove Alistair's. And then I was,
you've come of age. That's what's happened.
Ooh, I would.
They are nice.
They are very, very cool. And then if you want to go down, you know, your Series 2 and Series 3, how to tell them apart. The waters get muddy because Land Rovers get chopped and changed so much over the years. So you can't say it's not a hard and fast rule. But if everything's original, like your Series 2A and 2 and 2A have a wire mesh grill. Series 3 has a plastic grill. The Series 3 should have a heater intake vent in one of the wings, depending on whether it's a right or a left-hand drive. Things like that.
Series 3s will have an actual dashboard rather than a flat panel. So the speedo will go in front of the driver in a Series 3, but it'll be centre in a Series 2, 2A and 1.
Yeah. On the bulkhead of the Series 2 and 2A, the hinge... hinges for the windscreen are like flat pieces of plate, whereas on a Series 3 they're a proper bracket, almost sort of
like a Defender.
Yeah, it's sort of not quite as bulky as a Defender, but there's things like that. But the trouble is, when you see it all the time on vehicles that are for sale, like trying to identify what is actually original to that car and what's been updated, changed. Like for years, people, you know, back when they were new, people with a Series 2A that had the headlights in the grill would go, oh, and headlights in the wings because it looks newer. So they'd do that, but then, do you know what I mean?
Or leave the headlights in the middle and put the outer wings on.
I've never been a fan of that.
It's a funny old look. In fact, I don't know if you've watched the programme Amazing Spaces, George Clark.
Oh, right.
There was one on the other day where someone had got, he's got like a caravan, he's got like a camping trailer made to look like it was a 2A, but he'd also got Series 3 outer wings on it.
Okay.
And he'd made the trailer look the same. Mm. And then he built a mini rover type thing the same. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
It was a little bit too headlighty for my life.
Too many headlights.
Of course, we all know the favourite, we all know the best looking Land Rover of all time.
Go on.
In my opinion, it is a late 2A with the lights in the outer.
Do you think?
Yeah. For me, that depicts the perfect.
Okay. Okay.
That second to a Stage 1 V8 is the two best front ends of a Land Rover.
Interesting.
There you go.
See, I was always more of a fan of the 2A with the headlights in the grill panel.
Oh, I do like it. Don't get me wrong.
I think,
but I just think a late 2A is...
Oof. Yeah. I do admit, as a Series 3 owner, the Series 2A, 2 and 2A wire mesh grill does look tons better.
It does.
There's no denying that, I don't think. But similarly, I wouldn't go as far as putting one on my Series 3 because then
it's wrong.
You're kind of robbing it of a bit of its identity. You just got to accept it for what it is.
Or just buy another Land Rover if you want one.
Yeah, maybe. But so, yeah, I mean, yeah, a great time at Newbury. And actually, that was another sort of, I guess, a listener's question. A nice chap came over to me when I was marshalling in the morning and said, oh, I really like
the... Oh, you did do some work then?
I did loads of work. Yeah. Just didn't see any of it. Yeah. Too busy.
I was too busy
doing working. Whatever it is you were doing. But he came up and said, oh, I really like the podcast. I've just bought a Range Rover Classic. I was like, oh, all right, okay. And I was sort of concentrating on making sure traffic was going where it should. So we didn't have too much.
Which is actually quite hard work.
It's harder work than you might think.
People think he's a standing point, but people like to ignore people in high-vis jackets sometimes.
I think it's a bit of sport, isn't it, for them?
I think so.
And he said, oh, do you reckon you could do a bit on Range Rover Classics in the podcast? Because I've just bought one and I'm quite excited about it. I said, yeah, we'll see what we can do. So, I mean, to me, they fall into the same category as the Series 2A, and like they're a quintessential. Like, you'd see one on a postcard, wouldn't you, an old Range Rover, and you'd go, yeah. They look right. They're one of the best looking Land Rovers ever built, I think.
Oh, definitely. Timeless.
Yeah. Compared to modern stuff, the build quality of a Range Rover Classic, they feel quite flimsy and tinny these days, I think, compared to like...
Oh, very spindly in like the door pillars and...
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what made them great at the time, because they had that floating roof design, as they call it, where the roof's body colour and all the pillars are black, or you've got obviously windows in between, so they call it a floating roof.
A lot of glass.
Yeah, really, really great visibility. Driving position's quite high, obviously. The commanding...
There's not a lot of leg room in this classic Range Rover, I don't think. I've never thought, wow, this is spacious.
No. Have you ever been in an LSE?
I think I have driven one, actually.
I really, really like the LSE. I think they're one of those ones that sort of get ignored or you don't know about them. But when you do know about them and you spend a bit of time with one, you think, oh, yeah, these are a bit special. They're really, really cool. And they've often got much higher spec, like trim and carpet and stuff like that. And they're just like real things of luxury of their time. I would definitely snap up an LSE given the chance.
Does Land Rover have one on their fleet? Because I think I might have driven one of theirs.
I think they do. There's also one in the British Motor Museum.
Yeah, I'm sure I've driven one of theirs about 10 years ago.
Yeah, they're really, really nice.
And I remember it being, because it was unmolested.
Yeah. They came with a 4.2.
Yeah. Beautiful thing.
Gorgeous.
Really lovely.
Gorgeous. Yeah, really nice. Really hard to, well, this is something that I...
I know where there is one in there.
An LSE?
Mm.
Do you?
Yeah. May or may not need a little bit of welding.
A lot of them do, though, don't
they? And the guy is kind of like, I've got other projects and I can't be bothered. I could put you in touch.
Well, this is it. This is another thing that a lot of people, myself included, I've been sort of burnt by this, is there's an absolutely enormous gap in skill, time, parts between restoring something like a Series or original Defender and something like a Range Rover, a Discovery, due to the way the bodies are constructed.
Yeah, so I've always thought I would never take on a Discovery, for example.
Yeah.
It's too much.
It's a whole other world of...
And the overall thing, when it's finished, isn't worth anywhere near what the equivalent Defender would be, which is a shame.
They're getting there.
They are getting there.
As I found out with my Range Rover that I had, the last one I had, the 1992, I had great intentions of sorting it. It was gone everywhere. Everywhere you think that they rot, sills, inner front wings, rear arches, boot floor, rear cross member, body mounts, headlight boxes. It was absolutely just gone. And, you know, with limited bodywork experience and nowhere near enough time to dedicate to it, it just got to me. And then I ended up selling it to Tim Hammond, actually, a contributor for Land Rover Monthly. But, yeah, they're a whole different ball game.
I think when you're assessing them, because... You can't just buy a ready-made panel. Well, I mean, you can buy quite a lot of stuff, but they have to be finished right, buy on condition, big time.
Definitely.
And, like, actually, and don't underestimate how much time and effort that's going to take to do.
I spoke to Tim at length, and Tim Hammond, if he, you know, new to LRM or the podcast or the magazine, he's a very, very experienced restorer of Range Rovers and really, really knowledgeable guy. And he says, you're far better starting with one that's rusty but hasn't had any bad repairs over one that's been like patched up year on year for MOT and things that and had loads of like bodges done to it. Because at least with one that's got original metal that's rusted, you know where everything should be. So you're not trying to decipher bad fixes and like put stuff back in its correct place to make the body right again.
I get that. And my only experience of something like that was an MGB GT.
Okay.
Which had been because they've got like the box seals, castle rails, and all of that sort of thing. The seals are made up of like three pieces. And because it had already been done, not great, it was like, well, what do you do now?
Mm.
You've got no datum point to come back from. So I absolutely get that.
Yeah.
And it was the same British construction, aren't they? Just rotting steel, basically.
Yeah. It's a shame because I think, well, actually, a little preview into next month's issue of Land Rover Monthly, the June issue. Tim's done a fantastic technical piece on discoveries specifically, what to look for when you're buying an early discovery, whether you want one as a rolling project or a total restoration. And all the parts of the body that rust are covered, including how to fix them all. It's a
really good, that's good content.
Though. Absolutely.
I don't even know that's going in, actually.
I know, it's because I like to keep these things to myself and surprise you with them.
Yeah, but, even I don't know what's going on in the mag.
It's worth its weight in gold if you're into discoveries. Quite a discovery heavy issue next issue, but some really, really good stuff. So please pick up a copy.
We often get accused, don't we, of being defender heavy.
There's can't be accused of that anymore.
No, but we are mixing it up quite a lot.
Yeah. And actually, the following that these early discoveries have got now is brilliant. It's so good to see. I think it was a long time coming. And also, I don't think it will be too long before the 300 has its day.
I tell you, right, so imagine, like, I'm stood at Newbury and I've seen probably 700 trader vehicles come past me.
Yeah.
None, you know, you get the odd one that turns my head, you know, Land Rovers, lots of vans come in as well, as you imagine. The vehicle that turned my head last week was actually in Newbury Town Centre, was an early three-door Discovery, immaculate. It was being driven into Sainsbury's by a lady that looked like she was just about to go shopping.
Really?
Yeah, and it turned my head because it was stunning, because it was totally unmolested.
Yeah, it's a rare sight.
Yeah, very rare now, because they were on the roads all the time, weren't they? And all of a sudden they've disappeared.
Yeah. I think the 200's got the limelight at the moment. Obviously, the plastic surrounds on the headlight.
Yes, that was a 200.
Was it?
Yeah, it was a 200 one. Yeah. You just don't see them, do you?
No, you don't. Well, a lot of them
not being driven daily. Anyway, this was like a Friday afternoon,
mm.
going into Sainsbury's car park.
No, they are a rare one to see out. You know that, I suppose, not enthusiast owned that are still just being used as a car. They're a rare spot. But I do believe, honestly, if you come across a decent 300 series, buy it if you've got the means and you want one.
I should have kept that one I had here, which was my old mate Farmer Davies. It was a late three door.
Yeah, I think they'll have their day. Yeah, I think people will start cutting it.
Should have kept it,
because maybe they don't have quite as much history, if you like. They weren't that pivotal point for Land Rover, but they're. Obviously, a development of that, and they're such a good usable classic. 100%. So, we've kind of gone into discoveries off Range Rovers, but
they're similar construction, though, aren't they?
Yeah, but just know what you're getting into if you are buying one to restore it. But also, don't be scared, it is just, as Alistair commonly reminds me, every Land Rover is constructed in 30-second increments, if you know what I mean. Like, there is nothing impossible to do. It's all spot welds on the bodies on them, and as long as you can take it apart with sympathy and care and keep everything where it should be, you can buy most of the bits off the shelf, and you can
go and see our friends at YRM.
It's
Machinor,
DVS. There's lots of companies,
loads of different people doing them. Yeah
So don't be put off, it's all good.
We will do more range of stuff in the mag, because I think,
again, I'm not giving too much away.
Oh, okay.
There's a cracking feature in the June issue that's we've just sent to press, actually. So keep an eye out for that. Very, very special early two-door Range Rover. Oh. Fantastic story. Oh. Gary smashed it out of the park again. Yes. So anything else new your end? 90. What's happening with the 90?
My wiring loom
is
ready.
Excellent.
For collection. I've taken the heated matrix a bit.
Okay.
And I'm cleaning all that up to paint. And I've prepped all of the brake servo and all of that. Because actually they get rusty, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, some people go and get them blasted, don't they, in paint. But, I mean, where do you draw the line?
Yeah.
So I've drilled all the rivets out of this heater matrix, taken out some rather crusty foam. Doing to replace all of that. get all that painted, because the bulkhead's obviously on the chassis.
Yeah.
I may have found a painter.
Interesting.
Yes. Not going to paint it all in one go. I'm going to paint the bulkhead first.
Okay.
Then I'll take the rear tub and seat box, doors, bonnet, wings. But we'll buy all the paint in one go.
Okay.
He doesn't want the whole thing there.
Fair enough.
But he's a painter of essentially classic cars. Difficult, though, because the pricing. I can't remember if we've spoken about this on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, about the difference in pricing that I've been quoted.
I don't think we did go into pricing. You mentioned you were going to explore a few different avenues.
Which I have done. So I've had anywhere between £2,000 and £6,500.
Yeah, okay.
The £6,500 guy wasn't that bothered whether he took any work on or not.
Yeah.
Which is fine. But he wasn't pricing it out of the market. He said, the job that he would give would be too good for me.
Sure. Okay.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I reckon it's going to be about £3,000 of paint if I go with the guy that I've got in mind, but he's not that local.
Right.
He's about 70 miles away, but he comes as a recommendation from our friends from a Pint of Petrol podcast, Ian Arthur.
So, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm going to be talking with him a bit more.
Cool. I don't think that's a horrendous number to paint a Defender.
I don't think so.
Although, like we said before, you've got the sort of bonus of not having a roof, and most of your panels are new, so there's a lot less
prep
needed, which is where a lot of money goes.
Yeah, but I have spent some serious money at the minute. So you can imagine a new wiring beam,
yeah,
a bulkhead. What else? All the galvanized stuff that adds up.
Yeah,
in the wings. Yeah.
Then again, though, it's painful now, but down the line, you'll be pleased you did.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So, I've just got a garage that's in a bit of a mess because things are happening. But more will come apparent when we do a bit more YouTube and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny you should mention your heater box as well, actually. I've got mine. Mine's still off the 110 because I'm going to do a piece for the magazine and a video on how to improve your Land Rover's heating.
I'll read that then.
Yeah, it'd be too late. Yours will be back on by then.
Will it?
Oh, I don't know, actually.
Yeah, you know the speed I work, don't you?
But yeah, so that's a very similar condition to yours in that all the foam that's supposed to pack around the heater matrix is all dissolved and the heater matrix just rattling around. None of the direction flaps seal properly and one of the cables has come off. So it's absolutely a disaster, basically. Yeah. So I'm going to be fitting that. And also, I've got an uprated heater fan from Bolt-On Bits. Have you seen these?
No.
They are cool. They've got a hilarious name, which I won't repeat on here in case there's kids listening. But they're called a Big Power Fan. And it's essentially a fit and forget, exactly the same fitment heater fan, which goes into your heater box. And it's like a much higher RPM, much higher airflow than the standard one. I've got one of them to fit because mine was absolutely, like, normally they're a bit rubbish, but mine was where it had been stood, completely locked solid, like you couldn't even turn them
up. So mine's not seized, mine's fine.
Yeah, I mean, yours was probably last used.
Not that long ago, 4 years ago.
Yeah, not in the grand scheme of things. So that would be good. And if you want to uprate your Defender's heater, go and check out Bolt-On Bits. They, like, this drop-in fan kit is apparently very, very good, and I'll be able to test that firsthand very soon.
Will that blow, though? Otherwise, lukewarm air just a bit further, though.
Yeah, so it's not going to control.
Won't make it hotter.
No, packing the heater matrix properly with foam to stop the air going around the outside and sealing the box up properly makes it hotter. And sealing the duct, if you like, from the heater box into the cabin makes it hotter.
Okay.
The fan just delivers more air,
whether
it's hot or cold air. But the standard ones are a bit feeble.
Well, I was looking at those, the Alisport heater matrix. They're double width, aren't they?
Yes.
And you can make a modification to slide them in.
Right.
They're not cheap.
Hmm.
And I don't know whether it would make a busting lot of difference in a soft top Land Rover, which.
Yeah. Yeah,
kind of like defeats the object. It's a bit like. It's quite like putting the central heating in your house and opening the window, isn't it? So what's the point?
I think if you add like a station wagon or...
Yeah.
To be honest, they all leak, whether it's got hard top or soft top or anything. The air escapes quicker than you can pump
it. Oh, it does, yeah.
But it's undoubtedly going to make a big difference, especially if your heater core is knackered.
Just put a big coat on.
Exactly, yeah. Heated seats. If we can take one thing from electric cars, it's that it's not actually how warm you make the cabin. It's the things you touch that need to be warm.
Yes, I get you. Steering wheels.
Steering wheel, seats. Obviously, demist the windows. You have heater elements in the windscreen. All that stuff makes far more of a difference than actually making the air in the cab warm. Which is something I didn't really believe in until driving the old LR090 before it was rebuilt. And that had heated seats in it. Exmoor trim, the heated seats. And the cabin, I mean, it was a mess for a start. And the heater didn't work that well. But the heated seats really did warm you through.
Oh, okay. Good thinking, yeah.
So, yeah, it's an interesting one. Something you might not necessarily think of. But, yeah, obviously.
Good news.
Go on.
Well, I say good news. I'm sitting here with an invoice in front of me for
that's not normally good news.
A Northern Land Rover. So, do you remember the coolant issue smell? You may or may not have mentioned 2 or 3 weeks ago on the podcast.
Yes, I do remember that.
That I thought was coming from the Freelander 2 of yours, but it was actually coming from my Jag. Yeah. It was the Jag. They don't have a temperature gauge, those cars, right? So you have to allow, you have to.
You just have to trust it.
You wait for a light to come on. You don't. I didn't wait for a light to come on.
I was going
to say. The coolant level had dropped, as you know. Leaky water pump.
Oh, was it?
Yes.
Right, okay.
So, it came back just before you came here. So it got dropped back. I didn't fix it, obviously. My hands are clean.
How many miles has your Jag done?
75,000 miles.
Okay.
But it last had a water pump at 55,000 miles.
So I had one before already?
Yeah, 55,000 miles.
Oh, my word.
Apparently the 5-litre V8, which incidentally is the same engine as a Range Rover Sport, isn't it?
Yeah.
Same engine, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's not the most delightful job.
Quite keen for a water pump,
I think. They like a water pump. But we don't know what the quality of the water pump was last time. But our good friends at Rimmer Brothers were the people who supplied the water pump. OEM. 62 quid. Cheap. Cheap as chips.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
The bill wasn't 62 quid. No, that was just the water pump. But Rimmer Brothers are an hour away from here and they have them in stock. So for Jaguar Land Rover Triumph parts, they're pretty good.
Excellent
MG
stuff.
Rover.
Well, I'm glad it's sorted out and I won't have to look concerned when either my car or your car stinks of coolant.
If we smell coolant again, it won't be me. Well, I hope not anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say. Hopefully not. But what else have we been up to? Had a few easy wins on the 110. You know, you're ribbing me about how the 2.5 non-turbo is horrendous and I'll hate it.
You will. Yeah.
Well, I might hate it a bit less now because when I was putting the pedals back on after having the bulkhead footwell welded up, I realised that whoever set the cable onto the injector pump, it was only getting about 2/3 of the throttle travel.
Wow.
Yeah, so
that's equivalent to like 40 horsepower, not 60.
Honestly, must have been horrendous. I don't know how they...
Probably while it parked up 10 years ago.
Yeah, just left it. Just there. Like, what am I doing?
Nothing to do with the overheating. It was just like, this is so crap.
So I've now adjusted it and it does get full throttle travel and it hits the stopper on the pump rather than the pedal going to the floor and you not actually getting full throttle. So it doesn't really matter, actually, if you've got a petrol or a diesel engine. If it's got a throttle cable, for crying out loud, make sure you're getting full throttle.
Okay.
Because I bet a lot of engines are set up that aren't. And
yeah,
robbing yourself out of performance.
Yeah, and you need everything you can get. I can't wait. I'm literally cannot wait to see you drive that down around. I know you've driven it before, but...
I've only driven one before.
Have you?
In a 90 that used to come into the garret, the bigger I used to work at. I don't really remember it, to be honest.
So technically a 110 will be even slower because it's a bit heavier.
Probably, yeah. Probably. Oh, exciting news, actually.
Oh, right. Okay.
Back to our favourite subject of tyres.
Oh, I thought we were going to talk about cakes.
Oh, we should talk about cakes. Yeah. I like cakes. Tyres. No, better than cakes. Tyres. I've got some tyres coming for it, which I'm very excited about. Sort of deliberated for quite a while over what tyres to get for it, but because I want to keep it mostly standard, I've gone for a 750 fitment, which... Believe it or not, there aren't that many to choose from anymore.
No, they won't, because it's the metric equivalent of 235, isn't it?
Yeah, they're a bit skinnier than a 235.
Okay. Just.
Imperial fitment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I still find weird. If you look at how a tyre is sized, 235 is your width in millimetres.
Yeah.
85 is the aspect ratio.
That's percentage of the overall height.
Width.
Yeah, and up to the wheel, yeah.
So they're both metric measurements.
And then they go 16.
And then 16-inch wheel.
Yeah.
So it's a mixture of both. Anyway, I've gone for 750s, right? And I had to go back in time in my memory to think about what tyres I wanted. Because back, you know, years and years ago, everyone had 750s because that's pretty much all you could get. And that, as I said, there's not that many still being made. But I've gone for general super all grips. Do you remember the general super
all grip? Have you got a picture?
I'll show you a picture.
I need to see a picture. I can't think what they look like.
I've had, there's a few people like to still fit 750s to series Land Rovers, if you can find them. But a lot of them are like really gnarly aggressive, and some of them are remolds as well, which is fine, but they're not really what I want for the 110.
Okay.
The super all grip is a mud terrain. It's like quite a traditional looking mud terrain, but fundamentally, I wanted them because they're skinny, so they dig.
They look right.
They look right because I haven't got power steering on it. Will still be nice and light
until the TDI. You mean?
Yes, if you say so, Steve. And they're not quite, like I say, they're not quite as aggressive as a lot of the other 750s you can get, which would be, I don't know. They look like a reasonable compromise, but still a good enough mud tyre.
Yeah.
For the record, I'm showing Stephen a picture of the super all grip.
Yeah, look good. Yeah, they do look good.
The availability is still good. So if you've got an old Land Rover and you fancy fitting some kind of period correct, but using modern material, super all grip is what I've gone for, and I'll obviously be seeing how I get on with them and reviewing them further down the line.
Yeah, I look forward to that.
So, yeah, quite excited about that. One thing I'm going to look at buying, and you should too, if you've got garage like yours, is a set of skates.
Well, I have some.
You do have some?
I have some.
And I think I need some.
Really handy.
Yeah, because not so much for at home, because my...
We're not talking about roller skates here, are we? No. I look like, if I was on roller skates, I'd look like Bambi. Legs everywhere. No, seriously. So skates for your car.
Yeah, so...
To move around your garage.
I've got my little garage at home, but I've also still rent my unit because there's so much stuff in there that I can't give it up without... This is the snowball effect happening again. I need to build the garage at home properly before I can stop renting the unit and then move all my stuff. Anyway... When I've got a
first car, world problem right there.
It is a bit like that, but you know, when I've got a car in the unit, I share it with two other people. We often need to move stuff around. So having cars that are non-runners, which most of them are because we own scrap, being able to move them without starting and running them is really, really helpful.
Okay.
So having seen your skates, I think I'm actually going to invest in some because it would just make life so much easier.
So who's got them?
Funny you should ask that, Steve. You want to head to machinemark.co.uk, sell just such an item called the Clark VPJ300 is the product number. They don't call them skates, they call them vehicle positioning jacks. But yeah, you slide it under the wheel, pump it up like a hydraulic jack.
It sits in the well, the wheel sits in the well of it, doesn't it? Like a...
Yeah, so this has got two rollers, so it's a little bit light, a bit more lightweight and a bit easier to sort of jack it up with. And yeah, I've got hydraulic jack, a hydraulic ram in them.
Completely different to mine then.
Yes.
Mine are like casters, aren't they? And you put the wheel in the well.
Yes, yours you have to jack the car up and then put them in, don't you? Whereas these ones, you the car can be on the deck.
Ah.
You slide it beside each side of the wheel.
That's even better.
Yeah, there's a lot.
It's all right, it's a bit of a faff.
The principle, I guess, is similar, but these are like the next level. They'll easily take a Land Rover. They're rated to 680 kilos each.
Okay.
150 quid. Vehicle position jack, machinemark.co.uk. So I think I'm going to be putting in an order for some of them.
There you go.
I often do stumble across these things and I think, yeah. And do you know what? You never, ever regret buying tools. Have you ever noticed that?
I've never. No, I have noticed that. No, you never do. you always use it. I made this point when I built my garage, what, 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Instead of borrowing tools, have I ever borrowed any tools from you?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. Because if you find you need it once, you need it more than once.
Yeah.
So I end up going and buy them.
Oh, you did borrow my Rivnut gun, but look how that ended up.
Yeah. And then I realised that clearly something went wrong. What was quite pleasing, though, because do you remember you fitted...
You're shifting the blame now.
No, hang on. No. You fitted the near side one. And for some unknown reason, I fitted the one... Didn't I need some more drill bits or something? And I fitted the offside one. And I noticed, firstly, the offside one had gone loose.
Right.
And I thought, oh, that would be down to my inability to use a Rivnut.
Shoddy workmanship.
But then I had a look at the one on the near side, and it was just as loose, but I hadn't noticed.
You just geld it and give it a good tug.
Make yours look as bad. So I thought, well, if Martin can't do it, then it's obviously not just me, is it? But yeah, so I haven't borrowed your tools again, but I went and bought my own.
Yeah, it's the way forward.
That's what's handy about coming to our shows, because there's tool traders everywhere.
There certainly is.
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specialises in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
Should we have feature of the week?
Yes, is this a new feature or an old one?
Well, it's current. It's what
current.
It was current
issue right now. Okay.
Of Land Rover Monthly. So obviously camping with Land Rovers is really, really popular now.
Mm.
Everyone's all about the camping life, the hashtag van life, and the going off and, you know, getting away from it all, which I think there's a lot to be said for. But you don't have to slum it, as Brown Bird & Co. have proven with their Defender 110 build. This thing is an absolute work of art. Have you seen this? It is flipping amazing. So,
yes, I have. It's in the current issue.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
It's on the cover, no less. So this company specialised in traditional campers, like Volkswagens and stuff like that. And then they thought, do you know what? I'm bored of doing these old fans. I'm going to get something proper, like a Land Rover. So they went off and bought a Defender 110. And they've just gone. They've thrown the catalogue at it. And it is a thing of beauty, to be honest. It's Scandinavian inspired. So inside, it's all like very rustic, very natural wood and leather and, you know, sort of quite neutral, but
real lovely place to be, that would be.
Yeah, really, really high quality materials and fit and finish. Looks absolutely stunning. And it's got obviously the usual electrical system and heating and all that sort of stuff that you would expect from a modern camper. But yeah, it's sort of a cut above. It's just really, really cool. And, you know, even if you're not in the sort of market for something quite this high end, like the inspiration you could take from this to put into a build of your own is well worth looking at. It's really, really cool. Pop top roof, roll out awning, obviously the usual extra lighting modifications. It's got a set of Empire treads on it.
Nice.
The treads, they're a cool thing that let you step on the they go between the windscreen and the bulkhead, so you get an extra step up to the roof rack. Got solar on it, but yeah, the fold down table and like all the trim and the bed and everything just looks fantastic. It's really, really cool thing. So yeah, that's in the it's in the May issue, which is on sale at the moment. So grab it while you can, because June is a coming. We've waved it off to the
only time we've got a lookout feature.
Yeah, do it.
Tell you what, going back to Newbury, I noticed this time round how many people came over from overseas.
Yes, there was a
loads of people from Belgium this time.
Mm. Lots and lots.
Loads of people in those 130 Pulse ambulances.
Oh, was there?
Yeah, loads is from Belgium in that Scandinavian theme that you're talking about.
Yes.
In a 130 Pulse.
Yeah.
Man.
That would. But you wouldn't want much else, would you?
I have. Do you know what? I kept seeing them at the show on the weekend. I think I'm going to have to own one day.
Yeah.
But have you seen how much they are?
No, I've never looked, I must say.
They're strong money now.
Okay.
They used to be like 17 grand from Withams plus the VAT, something like that.
Really? It's still a lot of money, isn't it?
Yeah, but not for low mileage 300 TDI direct release. But they're like 40 grand now.
Wow.
And that's too much.
My...
Will they ever drop to 20? And if they did, not saying that I've got 20 grand, but that's kind of like my natural limit in my head that I think it's worth.
Personally, I have never really looked into Land Rover-based ambulance campers and things like that because the box bodies are really, really versatile, but they just look a little bit bulky. And like the back wheels are always tucked really far underneath.
I don't really like it.
From a looks point of view, they don't really do it for me.
And yet they do. I don't know why they do me.
But the amount of space you've got inside, I mean, I seen Dan Dew's one when I was over there getting the exhaust done, like the amount that he's got, 130 box body, absolutely enormous inside, like the sky's the limit.
Rough, you think?
Bit of interior design and feng shui, you'd be all over it.
Feng shui.
Feng shui. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll warm to them. And again, you can't sniff at the amount of usability you get from one, but I just need to look at. They look a little bit unwieldy.
Oh, they're heavy. They'll be heavy and slow. A bit like your one time.
So funny. Right. Product of the week?
Fire away.
Shall we go for product of the week? This one is from Land Rover Passion. Over in Italy, I believe they are. Suspension lift kit for Discovery 3 and Range Rover Sport. On air suspension, no less. So, Discovery 3, Range Rover Sport, if you want to give it a little lift, if you're doing a lot of green laning or off-roading and you want to maybe even fit some slightly larger tyres, this spacer lift kit gives you an extra 1.5-inch of ground clearance, and you also get the extended rods for the height sensors so it doesn't get all confused and not know what height it's at, and you even get extensions for the air pipes as well. So, bolt your spacers in between the chassis and the strut. Fit your extended rods so the ECU doesn't get all confused and throw a fit. And connect your air lines back up and you'll have a vehicle that still drives down the road nicely if you get it realigned. And, yeah, a little bit more ground clearance for off-roading. And also, as I say, a little bit more
room in the... aesthetics.
Yeah.
What sort of price is it?
It is €311, which is about, at the time of printing, £257.
Not as much as I thought.
Quite a lot for your money, actually.
Yeah, I thought it'd be more than that.
Yeah, pretty cool kit by the looks of it. I wouldn't mind seeing one of them in person. It's really quite encouraging to see the number of people using, especially Disco 3s and 4s, like doing proper builds on them now. They look really, really cool.
They do.
Something else that offers a lot for what you pay for them anyway.
We were talking to Eddie, weren't we, last week at All Makes and Terra Firma, and he's dailies of Discovery 4, doesn't he?
Yes, yeah.
And it's like the end, you know, in the back of his mind is when that blows up. It's a real shame, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's 10 grand engine job just waiting.
Yeah.
I think you've got to have that money.
But can you go through life like that, though? Because I'm becoming more and more, not gung-ho, but I do think, like, if you want to have something, like your Jag, to be fair, that could have been head gaskets. Then you'd have been up a creek, wouldn't you? Know what I'm saying? But you can't not enjoy something because it's giving you good service.
There's lots of reasons why you wouldn't buy it.
Yeah.
There's lots of people telling you, don't go near one of them.
Yeah.
Actually.
I mean, there's being realistic and there's burying your head in the sand, but if you really want one, just do it because you're never going to, do you know what I mean?
You have to scratch trees.
You're not going to you're not going to be lying on your deathbed going, God, I tell you what, I'm glad I didn't buy that Disco 4 because it could have blown up. Do you know what I mean?
You know, but ultimately, though, Discovery 4 is still the ultimate Land Rover, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Still.
Definitely. It's,
and they're cheap.
They are cheap. Regularly see like 8-speed ones now, like 2012 on for like 5-6 grand. You're like,
that's a lot of car for the money.
Yeah. Considering what they were new as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Finding one that's been looked after and not abused is becoming more difficult. But again, they are out there. People have still been running around in them as like nice cars and like family cars and things like that. They haven't all been killed.
Saw a video earlier. It may or may not have been on TikTok. Just saying.
Right.
And someone said that one of the top most least sold cars or difficult to sell used cars is an Evoque.
Really?
At the moment, yeah.
Difficult to sell?
Yeah, as in like they hang around, dealers can't get rid of them.
That surprises me, actually.
I know.
I thought they would move on quite quick.
One of the top 10. I mean, this was like one of the other cars. It was a Vauxhall Crossland.
I'm not surprised by that.
Yeah, but the Evoque apparently is just a difficult car to shift.
Interesting.
Don't know, perception's changed, doesn't it?
Because I saw something recently that said that the Discovery Sport was one of the fastest selling on the forecourt. So I guess they're probably different.
Quite possibly.
Target markets. But yeah, I don't know. I thought Evoque would be a fairly fast mover on a used car dealer. If you're a used car dealer and you're listening to the LRM podcast, why not drop us an email? We had Tom on here before, haven't we?
Yeah.
Arnold, our market expert, who imparted a lot of sage advice. But if you were actually, you know, feet on the ground doing this for a living, we'd love to hear about your experiences buying and selling Land Rovers. Because we're quite interested in it anyway, aren't we?
I know our listeners are. They're always asking us questions about buying Land Rovers.
Yes. In fact, if you look at, I occasionally go on our podcast hosting website and I look at how well the episode's doing, and a lot of the ones that have got buying in them, like buying guide, whatever, really, really like popular. So, yeah.
It's the same when we sell the magazine, isn't it? If you put buying guides on the front cover, you sell the magazine.
Time of year helps, but yeah, like people will always, it's funny because if you're actively looking to buy a Land Rover, as we know a lot of people are, people who've got in touch with us through the podcast who wouldn't necessarily even know that we did a magazine, which is still our...
This is an entry product into this hobby, I suppose.
They either want to know all there is to know about buying a Land Rover, which is something else we've got to focus on this year. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. Keep an eye on YouTube. And... or they already own a Land Rover, but they want reassurance and they want to know they've done the right thing, which you often get through reading buying guides.
Yeah, or problems that are likely to occur that you have not yet, in yours. And so actually, that's a good...
If someone said to me, you want to look at this, it's got a piece in it about why you should buy an absolutely hanging 2.5 non-turbo 110, I would go... Let me have a read of it. I need to feel better about myself. And it's the same for any model.
And yet no one's ever written it.
That's the next issue sorted then.
Yeah. how to increase the desirability of your 110 is you could pretend it's the best thing ever. Money, investment, and someone might come and buy it.
Yeah. I wouldn't do that though.
No.
I know what it is and that's what I appreciate.
Yeah, no, it's exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting. I like the whole keeping an eye on the market and see what's happening. Yeah, it makes you feel involved. Oh, the 109. Since I don't want to be one of those people that says, since you did this to my car, this has happened. But I noticed a couple of weeks after having the exhaust done that it was starting to run really badly. And I thought, maybe the carbs need different jets in them because it's flowing a lot more air now. It might need richening up a bit. So I tinkered around with it and it didn't really get any better. I thought, what's going on here? This isn't good. And I thought back to when I first bought it and I changed all 8 plugs, all 8 leads, distributor cap, rotor arm, and cleaned up the points, basically went through the ignition system completely. And I thought, it's been nearly 5 years. Maybe it's time to do that again. So, I had a rotor arm and a distributor cap on the shelf. And I thought, well, I'll start with them and then I'll order the leads and I'll order the plugs and I'll set a day aside and I'll struggle. When I went to change the distributor cap, I unclipped the old one and the distributor just moved by itself, just twisted around.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the nut, I think it's a nut on a stud. It's tucked right underneath, but there's a 9/16 nut or bulb that clamps the distributor down. And it had become loose and the distributor was just flopping about.
So I was like,
it had gone
perfectly timed, not timed.
Yeah.
Just, yeah.
It was just backing itself around basically. So I gave it a load more of advance because on those old engines, the timing marks are often worn off or not stamped onto the crank pulley.
All right.
Mine doesn't even have a pointer. So I just did it by ear. And yeah, it runs perfectly again now. Tightening that nut up. She's spot on.
So have you scrapped the idea of changing leads and plugs?
Yeah, it doesn't need it.
Well, there you go.
It's nice when there's
tip.
Yeah, free fixes are the best fixes. But being such a low compression engine, you can just run so much timing advance on that. It doesn't care. It's brilliant. You just keep winding it in until it pings. You can hear it pinking like under heavy acceleration. Oh, okay. And then go back a bit, tighten it up. Perfect.
Sweet.
She'll be good for another 5 years.
Yeah.
Ooh, okay. I need to make sure it's running well anyway, because it's going to be running coming down to Malvern with me in May.
Which is scarily not that long away.
It's not far off at all now.
It's about a month, aren't we?
Yeah, pretty much.
This podcast goes out.
It will be, yeah. Exciting.
Yeah.
This track, around. Oh, we have got some blinding trade stats.
There's some great people coming, yeah. Definitely, definitely worth coming to. Waking up in the Malvern Hills, as I've said before, is just a great place to be.
It is. And yeah, no, it's going to be a cracking weekend. We're really excited for it. We've got some great stuff lined up for the arena. Again, tons of auto jumble, some real, real big names. We're going to be updating the trader list on the website soon. So keep an eye on that and you'll go, oh, I could do with someone. I've been quite nice to talk to them. So yeah, come down. Camp for the weekend, because why wouldn't you? It's Malvern. It's an absolutely stunning place.
It's actually a bargain to camp.
It is, yeah. It's mega cheap for what you get.
So around that area, so if you were just to go camping,
yeah,
right, the campsite would cost you the same as we're charging, and you essentially get into the show for free. Because it's the same rate as the camping in nearby campsites.
Yeah.
And yet we've got the show.
And other nearby campsites don't have a beer tent. They don't have live music both nights with acoustic sets during the day as well.
No.
They don't have Land Rovers.
They don't have any of that.
They don't have falconry displays. They don't have stunt bikes. They don't have stuff for kids to do. I don't know if we can sell it anymore, Steve. What more do you want? No. Dunsfold are going to be there.
Yeah, of course.
It's
and me and you are going to be there.
Well, yeah, but yeah. People aren't there to see it.
That's put people off, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Don't forget also, if you want to take advantage of what will be a fantastic subscription deal, pop by the LRM gazebo, sign up, get the magazine delivered to your door before anyone else. And also, like I said before, if you've got little Land Rover fans with you, there'll be a box of goodies on the LRM stand so they can help themselves to a little keepsake from the show. But yeah, no, I'm really excited. And it's just a feel-good event, isn't it?
It is a lovely event.
Not a lot more to say about it, really. But yeah, keep an eye on our socials and look at the website to see exactly who is booked to come trade-wise. You won't be disappointed. It's a great lineup already. And if you're thinking of coming, if you are a trader and you haven't signed up to come yet, what are you doing? Because it's going to be awesome.
We will run out of space if we're not careful.
Yeah, get your booking form back in. Give Steve or Alice a bell and we'll see you there. It's going to be a blinder.
Yeah.
I'm keen. So, yeah. Ooh, while I remember, if you're listening to this podcast, next week's podcast is a really special one.
Because I'm not on it.
Steve's not on it. So
that's why it's special.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons it's special.
Better not be the most popular podcast because I'm not there.
Please listen to it. You'll really enjoy it. And also the one that follows that. So there's two episodes on the bounce. We've got very, very special guests on them. So be ready. Tune in your device at, you know, next Wednesday morning. It's going to be...
I'm quite looking forward to it because I'm not on it. And I'll listen to it with... Yeah. I've never heard the conversation before. So.
No, you've not even listened to it since.
No, I don't know. Yeah, I know who's on it.
I'll give you a clue. It was they were both recorded a little while ago, but I haven't been able to release them until now. And they coincide with the new issue of Land Rover Monthly going on sale. And they might be something to do with a recent television show, but I'm not going to say any more.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, they're really worth listening to.
Okay. I look forward to it myself.
As are all other episodes of the LRM podcast.
Oh,
obviously.
Absolutely, goes without saying.
So, but yeah, no, it's all good. We're really enjoying doing these. So please keep listening because it's good. And check out the LRM YouTube channel. Check out our socials and all that jazz.
All that stuff.
I feel like I've been on a bit of a hard sell this podcast. I feel a little bit...
Do you?
Yeah.
Welcome to sales.
I'm not very good at sales.
No, but we've got a lot to tell people, haven't we?
We have, that's true. We're better to do it. But no, LRM Live, going back to that, it's going to be a great weekend. I'm going to be on catering again.
Yeah, not for everybody, I presume.
No.
Like, okay, entire listener, every listener of the podcast comes, where's my burger, mate?
No.
You're on catering for like staff catering, you mean?
Our tiny little, my tiny little barbecue probably won't cater for everyone's coming. But
please, sir, can I have another one?
Yeah, I'm excited for that. I love barbecues and I love camping and I love Land Rovers. So you ain't going to get much better than LRM Live. And it's such good value. Did we mention the parking's free?
Yeah. Oh, no, not this time, no.
You know,
it's free parking.
It's free parking. We're not going to charge you for the privilege of leaving your Land Rover in a field, you know.
At an event that you can't get to any other way.
Yeah, because that'd be silly. But anyway, yeah, we hope to see you there. God. I'm running out of breath. I've been selling too hard on this one. Sorry for all the sales talk. Business will be...
Well, next week, we won't hear from... They've already pre-recorded, so you can't put any selling into that.
No, that's true.
But... So no more selling for 2 more weeks.
Yeah, I'll leave the selling to you.
No, Dame.
You're better at it than
I. It's a horrible job.
Don't be like that. Right. Yeah.
That's us.
That's us, I think. My throat's hurting. It's been a busy time. Newbury takes it out of you, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. We're done. This is the first. What day is it now? Thursday after the
Thursday.
Event.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're still tired.
Yeah. Well, it was a double whammy because Newbury happened on Sunday, then we came back, and then because of Easter, all the print deadlines got messed up, so the magazine had to go to press sooner. So it was straight back into that, and it was it's busy times. But again, I'm excited because tomorrow I get to gallivant around the country picking up tyres. So. It's a good day.
Sounds good.
Right. Well, thanks ever so much for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye for now.